and the demons. Text number 1. Sri Shuka Uvacha Iti Danava Daityaya Navindan Amrutam Nrupa Yuktaha Karmani Yattascha Vasudeva Paran Mukhaha Iti Danava Daityaya Navindan Amrutam Nrupa Yuktaha Karmani Yattascha Vasudeva Paran Mukhaha. Please recite. Ladies, please. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Shukadev Goswami said, Iti, thus, Danava Daiteyah, the asuras and the demons. Na, not, Avindan, achieved the desired result. Amrutam, nectar. Nrupa, O king. Yuktaha, all being combined. Karmani, in the churning. Yataha, engaged with full attention and effort. Cha, and Vasudeva, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, paran mukhaha, because of being non-devotees. Translations and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There is hardly a purport all the way to text 38. So prepare to hear this story of the fighting between the demigods and the demons. And it is said in one of the verses that when you hear about this fighting, it is so exhilarating, that for the listener the hair should stand on end. So let's see. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, the demons and the daityas all engaged with full attention and effort in churning the ocean, but because they were not devotees of Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. Oops. So I'm going to ask you some questions as we go along, okay? So first question is, if they're not devotees of Krishna, why is Krishna biased that they should not drink the nectar? I thought Krishna is neutral and equal to all. Why should they not drink the nectar? Text 2. O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead had brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the demigods who are his devotees, he left the presence of them all and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. 3. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. Thus they began to march towards the demigods with raised weapons. 4. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods who were always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayana used their weapons to counterattack the demons in a fighting spirit. 5. O King, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk ensued between the demigods and the demons. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair on one's body stand on end. Romanchakampa, right? When we sing the glories of Guru, hair supposed to stand on end. And when we hear the story of demons and demigods fighting, hair is supposed to stand on end. Haribol. Text 6. Both the parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart. And in enmity, they beat one another with swords, arrows, and varieties of other weapons. Short purport. There are always two kinds of men in this universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets like the sun and moon also have enemies like Rahu. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. That means in the demigods' side, there are persons who are not intelligent. Because it says intelligent persons on both sides. Text 7. The sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, bheris, and damaris, kettle drums, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers who were both on chariots and on foot were tumultuous. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers, the infantry soldiers with the opposing infantry, the soldiers on horseback with the opposing soldiers on horseback, and the soldiers on the back of elephants with the enemy soldiers on elephants. In this way, the fighting took place between equals. Text 9. Some soldiers fought on the back of camels, some on the backs of elephants, some on asses, some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys, some on tigers, and some on lions. In this way, they all engaged in fighting. Text 10 through 12. O King, some soldiers fought on the backs of vultures, eagles, ducks. How would you sit on the back of a duck and fight? Quack, quack, you're crushed. But anyway, ducks, hawks, and bhasha birds. Some fought on the backs of timingalas, which can devour huge whales. Some on the backs of sarabhas, some on buffalo, rhinoceroses, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. Others fought on the backs of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mounted on animals of the water, land, and sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. I mean, if you close your eyes and imagine someone sitting on a duck, a lizard, and a rat, it's like, wow, what a fight. Okay, text 13 to 15. O king, O descendant of Maharaj Pandu, the soldiers of both the demigods and demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags and umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful, and in the light of the glittering sunshine, their shields, ornaments, and sharp, clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus, the ranks of soldiers seemed like two oceans with bands of aquatics. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Maharaj Bali, son of Virochana, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayasa. O king, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all types of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of chamaras, Maharaj Bali, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Surrounding Maharaj Bali on all sides were the commanders and captains of the demons, sitting on their respective chariots. Among them were the following demons: Namuchi, Shambara, Bana, Viprachitti, Ayommukha, Vimurdha, Kalanabha, Praheti, Heti, Ilvala, Shakuni, Bhutashantapa, Vajradamstra, Virochana, Hayagriva, Shankushira, Kapila, not Lord Kapila, Megadundhuvi, Taraka, Chakradruk, Shumbha, Nishumbha, Jamba, Utkala, Arishta, Arishtanemi, Tripuradhipa, Maya, the sons of Puloma, the Kalakeyas, the Nivatakavacha. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar and had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods, and to encourage their armies, they made a tumultuous sound like the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells. Balabhit, Lord Indra, upon seeing this situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Sitting on Airavata, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Purport. On top of the mountain called Udayagiri are large lakes from which water continuously pours in waterfalls. Similarly, Indra's carrier Airavata holds water and wine in reserve and showers it in the direction of Lord Indra. Thus Indra, king of heaven, sitting on the back of Airavata, appeared like the brilliant sun rising above Udayagiri. 26. Surrounding Lord Indra, king of heaven, were the demigods, seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O king, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Heti, and Mitra with Praheti. Mitra means the sun god, another name for the sun god is Mitra. Yamraj fought with Kalanabha, Vishwakarma with Mayadanava, Tvashta with Shambhara, and the sun god with Virochana. Oh, there's another sun god. It says Savitra, sorry. Mitra is that sage or that demigod who's the father of Maitreya. Mitra, Maitreya. All right, text 30 and 31. The demigod Aparajita fought with Namuchi, and the two Ashwini Kumara brothers fought with Vrishaparva. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling air fought with Puloma, and Shumbha and Nishumbha fought the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who is called Bhadrakali. O Maharaj Parikshit, suppressor of enemies, Lord Shiva fought with Jambha, and Vibhavasu fought with Mahishasura. Ilvala, along with his brother Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmasha fought with Cupid, the demon Utkala with Matruka, demigoddesses, Brihaspati with Shukracharya, and Shaneshchara, Saturn, with Narakasura. The Maruts fought with Nivata Kavacha, the Vasus fought with Kalakeya demons, the Vishvedeva demigods fought the Puloma demons, and the Rudras fought the Krodhashva demons, who were victims of anger. All of these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefields with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. All of them desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like bhushundis, chakras, clubs, rishtis, pattishas, shaktis, ulmukas, prashas, parashvadhas, nistrimshas, lances, parighas, mudgaras, and bhindipalas. So there will be a quiz tomorrow morning. You have to remember at least 5 weapons. And in Sanskrit. Translation, next 37. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. 38. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and the demigods and the wheels of the chariots, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over the space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. Purport. The cloud of dust covered the entire horizon, but when drops of blood sprayed up as far as the sun, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. A point to be observed here is that although the blood is stated to have reached the sun, it is not said to have reached the moon. Apparently, therefore, as stated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, the sun, not the moon, is the planet nearest to the earth. We've already discussed this point in many places. The sun is first, then the moon, Mars, Jupiter, and so on. The sun is supposed to be 93 million miles above the surface of the earth, and from Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the moon is 1.6 million miles above the sun. Therefore, the distance between the earth and the moon would appear to be 95 million miles. So if a space capsule were traveling at the speed of 18,000 miles per hour, How could it reach the moon in 4 days? At that speed, going to the moon would take at least 7 months. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days, therefore, is impossible. I leave the moon landing for the fortunate soul tomorrow, whoever it is. Tonight, this morning, we'll only focus on the fighting and war because I like that stuff. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shravasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here, standing on end. Yes? So few things to as observation and I guess interesting in this pastime so far. So first of all, that Mohini Murti spoke sweet words to the demons but gave the nectar to the demigods. Actually, even before that, this is the only pastime in which the Lord appears many times. In all other pastimes, he appears once. Like Lord Ram's Leela, he appears once, there's a whole pastime, and then he moves on. In this churning of the milk ocean, the Lord appeared many times within the same pastime, if you will, although it's stretched over time. So first, he appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead with 8 arms, and the name of that form is Ajita. Then when they started churning the milk ocean and the mountain was not balanced because they had to put it on in the ocean, it fell to the bed of the ocean, so he came as Kurmadev, the tortoise form, to act as a pivot for the mountain. And he said that while they were churning the mountain, it was like a nice back rub for the Lord and it was very pleasing. Then, out of the churning, he appeared as Dhanavantri with the pot of nectar. And as soon as the pot of nectar was stolen, he appeared as Mohini Murti. And he, I guess, bewildered and charmed the demons, smiled at them, and gave the nectar to the demigods. And he will appear one more time as Vamanadev, this dwarf incarnation. That's why he's on the cover of the book. He will come again because between these two fighting, there is more, I guess, intrigue waiting to happen. Because whenever a fight happens like this, it has to be resolved. Things cannot settle simply by fight. So what happened is, when the nectar was given to the demigods by Mohini and Rahu's head was cut off, the Lord showed, Mohini Murti showed her real form as Lord Vishnu. And so now the demigods, they had drank this nectar and they became very, very strong, energized and completely rejuvenated, and now they were not scared of anyone. Previously they had been beaten very badly. And we know they were beaten very badly because they went, well, they didn't go. Indra offended his guru, Brihaspati. And because he was neglected by his guru, himself and the entire demigod, set of demigods, lost all their power. And the only solution was for Lord Vishnu to intervene and give them the nectar so that at least they're physically strong. Because without the demigods, the demons have a tendency to exploit for themselves. And it causes an imbalance in the universe. And Lord Vishnu does not want such an imbalance. He is the ultimate arbitrator of how the universe should function. So he wants the demigods. So he gave them the nectar so they are protected, and all other living beings across the universe are sheltered. So the demons became very angry. Now we might say, yeah, demons are supposed to become angry. You know, no wonder they fought. But here there is Bali Maharaj on the side of the demons, and he's the leader. And this whole pastime will unfold in such a way that the hero from this whole thing will be Bali Maharaj, will emerge very soon. So one might wonder, why is Bali Maharaj fighting? Didn't he hear this verse? Trinadapi Sunichena Taruriva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Nectar Kijai. I mean, why didn't he just say, okay, that is Krishna's arrangement? He's a pure devotee here. He's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So I'm sure at home they're having Bhagavatam Katha, Narsingadev Katha, all the prayers to Lord Narsingadev. So why Bali Maharaj couldn't say, oh, that's what Krishna wanted the demigods to have the nectar, no problem. Bali Maharaj is representing as a leader in this case. This is my understanding of it. That he's representing all the persons under him who had churned the milk ocean with all their strength. And now they've been cheated of it. They've been cheated of their fair share. And so he is upset. He's upset that their fair share was not fair, that they didn't get what they were promised originally. Secondly, he's also performing his function within the world, regardless of how he is as a devotee. The function is that they're always competing for supremacy. They want to be the leaders. They're convinced that they are the correct leaders for the universe. When someone has very strong convictions about why they are right, you cannot have rational conversations that say, well, actually, you know, it is this way, or think logically. Rationality doesn't work. And Bali Maharaj, as the leader, is saying, hey, what's going on here? These demigods, they cheated us. They made us work. They made us churn the milk ocean with them. And we put in equal effort. But we were deprived of the nectar. So Bali Maharaj didn't like Indra's mentality. That how could you take away all of the nectar. Now at this moment, we also have to consider Bali Maharaj outside of his character as a pure devotee for the moment. Just as when we are discussing Bhagavad Gita, in that context, we don't consider Arjuna as the pure devotee per se in that moment. We see Arjuna as the character who's very similar to us. Meaning he's being used by Krishna in the pastime to teach us something. For example, as a pure devotee, why would he order Krishna? Why would he become bewildered? Etc. So we understand that this is Krishna's way of using his devotee to manifest lessons for us. So another way to see Bali Maharaj's declaration of war is to see within us any I guess, conditioned living entity, that tendency to be the underdog and fight for, justice, or fight for, or feeling the victim, that's a better phrase, feeling victimized and fighting for his or her right. So when we see it from that point of view, it seems, yeah, okay, I can understand why he challenged the sense of unfairness here. We go back to fourth canto. I'm just phrasing so we don't think Bali Maharaj is like, why is he fighting for something so, you know, filthy like a kingdom? He doesn't care. We go back to fourth canto, and Prithu Maharaj, who's the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he's performing 100 Yashvamedha Yajnas, because one who does so becomes Indra in his next life. So he has done 99 Yajnas very successfully. The 100th is about to begin. And Indra, dressed as a sannyasi, steals his horse. Now you can't do Ashwamedha Yajna without the Ashwa, the horse. And Prithu Maharaj's son, he recognizes, hey, that's Indra in disguise. Why is he doing this? And Prithu Maharaj becomes extremely angry that this Indra, why is he interrupting? Now, Prithu Maharaj is a supporter of the demigods. So even among them, there is this, why is he interfering in the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna? Because Indra became insecure. Indra is that position, he exemplifies how someone at a very high position, although very powerful, has dominance over so many people, is still insecure in the heart, because any time that position may go away. So Indra was insecure. So although they're very elevated personalities, they're still plagued by things that we deal with. So we these are lessons for us. So when Prithu Maharaj became very angry, he was about to chop off Indra's head, Lord Brahma intervened and said to Prithu Maharaj, you've done 99 yajnas and they were all very successful. So what if the 100th is not? How does it matter to you? You're not aspiring to be Indra or anything. Just let it go. He told him, take the high road, I guess. And Prithu Maharaj said, fine. And he didn't perform the 100th yajna. Another way to see this is this entire fighting and all of this pastime is now a build-up. It's the preparation ground for something very fascinating to happen. And that very fascinating is that the Lord is now going to throw spotlight on Bali Maharaj. That we might wonder, you know, although he's fighting, he's charging his entire army against the demigods, he seems to be one of the, you know, demons that we read with other names like Namuchi, Shambhara, Nishumba, Kumbha, Ilvala, Vatapi. I mean, his name is in the list of really, you know, terrible demons. And Krishna, he's going to shine light upon that even among the demoniac persons, here's a shining example of a pure devotee. And that is difficult to comprehend. How can a demon be a pure devotee? Isn't that a sort of an oxymoron? You call him demon and you call him pure devotee? How's that going to work? And that's the whole idea, that the externalities don't matter. Although externally he's fighting the demigods, although externally he's raging war and he's fighting for this cause, he's actually a pure devotee. So pure devotees come in all these shapes and forms and sizes and, you know, characters that is hard to discern. Just previously, Indra was fighting with Vritrasura, 6th canto. And Vritrasura, who's a demon, actually in the whole pastime turns out that he's the hero and Indra is the villain. There's one purport where Prabhupada writes, Indra is the actual asura and Vritrasura is the actual demigod here. So their positions and their service are very, I guess, contra, the very opposite, but it's the consciousness with which they render their duties is what's being highlighted. So Bali Maharaj is this very, he's a very enigmatic personality. He's the head of the demons, but he's the pure devotee that the Lord is about to glorify like anything. So we're anticipating this whole pastime of the appearance of Vamana and how Bali Maharaj surfaces as the jewel among all these persons, both demigods and demons combined. Then we hear all these fighting. One of the things, you know, as I was reading, they were fighting, sitting on the backs of ducks and fowls and rats and lizards. And it's like, how do you sit on a lizard and fight? So that means that the demons who sat on the lizard must be small, or the lizards must be like these huge, strong iguanas or whatever they are, you know, some big, strong animals. And they're fighting, you know, some sitting on rats fighting with each other. You know, if they need supply, we're happy to supply to them, right? And they're fighting. The point is, why all these living entities and all these sorts of small, big, medium, large, extra large demons are all in the war? You know, when you're fighting with someone, both verbally and physically, I don't know if you have the experience, when you're fighting, you take everything that you have and throw at someone. You're not looking, hey, I can't throw this. Oh, that's a desk, I can't throw that. That's a paperweight, I can't throw that. It's not like that. When you're angry, whatever comes to your hand, you throw. So they gathered everyone, even the little tiny guys who sit on lizards. Yes, yes, you also come, fight, do anything you can. Just as when Lord Ramachandra was building this bridge, they had Hanuman, Sugriva, Nala, all these big, big monkeys that could lift mountaintops and throw into the ocean. And Lord Ram also, engaged. Sometimes it said a small squirrel, sometimes it said spider. They were also, you know, how much dust can a spider put into the ocean? Like, what's this? But it doesn't matter. They're all part of service. So spider was also engaged like this. Everyone, anyone, you can help a little bit, go ahead. Help as much as you can. So everyone was engaged in fighting. And this is fighting among equals, they're fighting in pairs. And Prabhupada writes, in the universe, there are always these two kinds of people. One with the, demigod mentality, which means that they want to follow the rule or law of the Lord, and the others who challenge it. And these wise will constantly fight, Prabhupada writes, unless there are intelligent persons on both sides who take up Krishna consciousness. That means this competition, that's what's manifesting right now, that there is this severe envy. The demigods are envious that after all the hard work they put in, they did not get the nectar. And envy brings out competitiveness. Or we say, whenever we see competitiveness, that's an indicator of envy. Unfortunately, all of our education, our sports, they're all competitive. And when there are competitive sports, we find ourselves polarized. We become fans of one side and we dislike the other. There's no person who's at a competitive sport who says, you know, it doesn't matter who wins. Of course, people say nicely, may the better team win and all that. But internally, if there is envy in the heart, if we orient ourselves towards one of the teams, it's but natural. It is this envy that puts people into two categories for us. A category we call friends and a category we call enemies. People I like, people I don't like. These people are favorable to me, these people are not favorable to me. These are persons I like to hang out with, these are persons I don't like to hang out with. These are persons who are nice to me, these are persons who are not nice to me, etc. We sort of categorize, we polarize people on the basis of envy. And Krishna consciousness is meant to remove that envy from the heart. So because it is at the level of the soul, and when the soul by itself doesn't have that kind of envy to say, you know, I like this, I don't like that. So you go beyond the caste, you go beyond the color, you go beyond the race, you go beyond the gender, you go beyond the service, you go beyond all of that to say, we're all parts and parcels of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated quite the opposite. Now this is happening at the time of the sixth Manu. We are in the time of the seventh Manu. This is happening at the time of the sixth Manu, correct? Chamasa Manu time, if I'm not wrong. Or is it already the seventh Manu? I can't remember. Manu? Okay. Seventh Manu sitting here, or eighth one. So this is long time ago, and it's not Kali Yuga, and they're fighting. So it is in the Bhagavatam, because it's a rare phenomenon that someone is fighting so crazily during the time of Satya Yuga. Now in Kali Yuga, people are fighting all the time. It's no surprise. If two people fight, we're like, only if two people don't fight, we talk about them, you know? They never fought with each other. That is so surprising. Wow, they don't fight with each other. Or let's say, divorce is so common nowadays. There is someone divorces, we don't talk about it so much. Like, oh, okay. If someone stays together for 50 years, we celebrate. Wow, they made it to 50. They didn't fight, they didn't separate. One of my friends, he said, love at first sight, divorce at first fight. It's so easy, not just husband and wife, among two friends, brothers and sisters, parents and children. The sense of quarrel is so intense, that it takes the slightest of thing to put, you know, some spark between the two, the fire, or break things. So easy. And we are trying to work against that force in Kali Yuga under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada's shelter. So things happen for us in our relationships, whether it's our friends, our parents, our relatives, fellow devotees, whoever. Things are always challenged. The relationships that we are trying to build, they're always challenged. Someone says something, whether we like it or not, somehow they said it, and it hurts us. Here they said, you know, before they threw weapons at each other, they threw very harsh words at each other that was piercing the heart. Like, you know, the yo mama jokes, you know, yo mama's like that, yo, oh, don't talk about my mom, I'm gonna fight you, don't talk about my mom. They were insulting each other, because insult adds more to injury. And that's how they started fighting. They started throwing things. It always happens when before two people fight, they argue. And when they argue, one of them crosses the line. And you say, hey, don't cross the line. That's about my mom. You don't speak about my mom. You cross the line on this one. Then something else will happen, and you know, there's a punch below the belt. Hey, that's below the belt, not allowed. You know, so there's some tolerance. And beyond that, you hit me below the belt, You talk about my mom, I'll tell about your mama. And it just goes, escalates very quickly. And from words, it becomes fist fight. And then you throw everything at each other. Very many years ago, I saw the movie War of the Roses. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I'm not recommending that you see it, but it's the fight between a husband and wife. Over time, it becomes so worse that at the end of the movie, they're actually killing each other. It's very, very, I mean, it's gory, but how things escalate. So in Kali Yuga, it's not a surprise that people fight. It is actually a surprise if we can say, you know what, fine, I don't want to fight. You're right, whatever, I don't want to fight. So in any relationship, I heard recently, there are four challenges. There is always an impediment. There is always a scarcity. And two more things that I forget. Impediment, scarcity, some disappointment, and something else. We'll notice, it's always the case. But our training is to go beyond that. Okay, there's this impediment. I have a choice. I break the relationship or I continue. There is this scarcity. You know, I give and give and give, but nothing comes back. What is going on? I don't want this relationship. Or there is this misunderstanding, misgivings. He said, she said, I thought she said, I thought he said, whatever. And we allow those things to become the cause for strain in the relationship. And so if you remember that in Kali Yuga, one of my devotee friends said, in Kali Yuga, Kali is actually relaxing. In all of the yugas, Kali has to work very hard. Why? Because in all other yugas, for Kali to break a relationship, the fellow has to work so hard. Even then, people don't break their relationship so easily. So he has to do a lot of things for a relationship to break. By the time it's Kali Yuga, he sits down in a relaxed fashion and says, psh, all I have to do is put a little misunderstanding between two people and they'll take care of it from there on. They will easily fight and break their relationship. Psh, this is very easy. Breaking us in Kali Yuga is very easy. Because Kali, his job is very simple. However close our friendship, he puts a little seed of misunderstanding and that's it. He sits back and he watches the fun as we fight and destroy all our friendships. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he works against that. That's why he never said, not that we should not, his movement is about Sankirtan, collective. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't start the movement of individual japa. Because we chant japa, he chanted japa too. Prabhupada taught us to chant japa, no doubt. But when he said Sankirtan, means we get together, and we glorify Krishna. Because there is strength in unity. There is strength in numbers. There is strength in associating with each other. And that strength is supposed to give us the immunity against Kali's, you know, little darts. The little things that Kali will throw at us. And we have to show Kali, this won't work. We all have different skin colors, we have different cultures, we come from different mentalities, but we can work together because we are under Lord's Gaura and Nithai and their shelter. And we have Prabhupada as our leader, our spiritual masters holding us. So Kali, we give Kali a good fight in that sense. We give Kali a hard time. We don't make it easy for him. So Kali then enters, you know, way different, puts little seeds in our mind. Maybe they don't like you. Maybe they don't want to. So then we tend to isolate or draw back. And as we draw back, the whammy. Therefore, Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that we open our heart and express, I'm feeling like this. This is hurting me. This is bothering me. Help me. So we all stay together as a body of devotees. Otherwise, you know, we're shaved with sikha and no different from the victim of Kali Yuga. So relationships are always challenged. There is no relationship in this age that is not challenged. Relationship with guru gets challenged, relationship with wife and husband gets challenged, children, friends, relatives, bosses and employees, whatever, authorities and subordinates, etc., friends, every relationship. In fact, even our relationship with Krishna will be challenged by Kali. And we are trying to work with the help of others against that current. So we don't get into the sense of fighting. They're very powerful. Each person here, their name is listed in Bhagavatam. They're very, very powerful. Separately, in the Puranas, when we read these names, they don't mean much to us. Like, okay, so there are these names. But actually, the Puranas are full of each person's story. So we know, hey, the resume is quite shining. You know? If we don't, let's say, you know, this is October. So I don't know. In August, let's say there's the US Open tennis. If we don't care about tennis at all, none of the names will matter to us. Like, okay, who's this guy? Whatever, I don't know this guy. I don't care for tennis. It has no relevance to me. But those who know tennis, they'll be like, wow, it's a star-studded list. So as we know the Puranas, when you read these names, you wonder, oh, these demons are very strong. You know, Banasura, Narakasura, Banasura had 1,000 arms. It was so strong. Krishna kills Banasura in the Krishna book. Krishna kills Narakasura. He's also there. Then all these Ilvila and Vatapi, the two brothers, Prabhupada refers to them, that they had a very demoniac habit. So I'll end with that, because nice to hear about Vatapi and Vila, very saintly persons. These two brothers, they liked to eat human beings. They're human eating, man eating demons. They didn't like any other meat, only human meat they liked. And that too of a brahmana. They didn't like kshatriyas. You know why? The kshatriyas' bodies are very tight. Muscles are hard. It's tough to eat it. Brahmins are very soft. Because they're not, you know, lifting weights and, you know, fighters. Brahmins are very soft. So they liked brahmin meat. Yeah. So they had a plan. Ilvila would chop off his brother Vatapi and cook him. He would cook his brother and feed it to the Brahmins. And when the Brahmin would eat, Ilvila would say, Vatapi, come out. And from the stomach, Vatapi would burst out. All the pieces would apparently get together. Vatapi would come out of the stomach of the Brahmin, and then they would eat that Brahmin. These fellows are very Vatapi and Ilvila. Huh? What a story. So one day they met Agastya Muni. You know, Agastya is this sage, very powerful sage, who's a little short, is dwarf-like, but extremely powerful. Very, very. And Agastya Muni appears again and again in Ramayana. So very powerful sage. So one day he was walking through the forest, and these two looked at Agastya Muni and said, yeah, nice lunch. So Ilvila cooked Vatapi and fed him. And Agastya Muni knew, because he's a very powerful sage. So as soon as he ate it, he said, Vatapi, you're fully digested in my stomach. So when Ilvila said, Vatapi, come out. Sage Agastya laughed and said, what Vatapi? He'll only come out in another form tomorrow. Forget it. He's done. And Ilvila then got scared and ran away. That's how Agastya Muni kills Vatapi, simply by digesting him. This is the power of these sages. So anyway, these are all these personalities who were in the Puranas, and they all fought with the demigods. So this is like a star-studded fight, the clash of the titans, I guess, that's what we say. But they are plagued by That's what Bhagavatam is showing us. They may be the stars. They may be the big, big guys, powerful, great resumes, long life. They're controlling the universe. But they're plagued with envy. And see that even if they're so big, how quickly they will crash. What to speak of us? So there are lessons for us in this. Any comments, questions? Any question about Vatapya Rilvila? Manu? Kardanidhi Prabhu. Here's a mic for you.
I have a question. Thing is that Indra is a post.
Indra is a post.
He's like a president.
Yes, yes.
He's a post.
Yes.
So like that, certain like Obama is the president.
Who?
Obama is president.
Yes.
So similarly, who is that demigod? He's the present time. Who is the Indra?
I wish I knew the name. It is referred to in either the 8th canto or in the beginning of 9th canto. We hear that Vaivaswata Manu. Vaivaswata because he's the son of Vivaswan, but he has his own name. He becomes Manu. And the particular person is Indra. His name is given. I can't remember right now. The next one, after Vaivaswata Manu, the next Manu coming up, his name is... the 8th Manu, the Indra will be Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj will become Indra. And Ashwatthama. Who's the next Vyasa? Ashwatthama will become the next Vyasa. So the positions. Jitendra Prabhu and then Mataji.
I remember Srila Prabhupada saying that the Kali Yuga is so charged with nescience, and there's so much material activity going on that it's impossible almost to avoid fighting. And then he says in Kali Yuga, the previous ages, Krishna would come and kill the demons, but in Kali Yuga, the demons are so cooperative, they're killing each other. So that just a few things came to mind, but...
previously, the envy that these persons had, it was against a certain set of people. The demons had envy against the demigods, and likewise the demigods had certain envy towards the demons. But as time progresses, people have envy against each other, even if they're in the same camp. And it degrades to very bad, such that people will have envy towards their own sibling, parent, child, husband, spouse, whatever. And self-envy.
Too much I, me, and mine.
Too much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Krishna Arjuna Mataji.
I was just thinking, Nityananda Pran, the demons had agreed to Mahini Murti's proposal that they would accept even if, whichever way she behaved, honorably or not so. And they directed their anger or that sense that you were describing of having been cheated towards the demigods just on the basis of the fact that the demigods now appeared more opulent because of having drunk the nectar. So there's no mention that they had any anger towards Mahini Murti, which is interesting because generally, one would think, you trace the cause of your anger to the moment of when you cheated or... So I'm just wondering... that the demigods in some sense took their sense of having been cheated out on the demigods as opposed to the source of the cheating.
Two things. This is an excellent observation. we might see, or I shouldn't say we, the demons are seeing themselves as the underdogs who got cheated. But if we are objective, then we notice that they said to Mohini Murthy, "You distribute the way you like. We fully trust you." And she told them, "I'm not to be trusted." Which means she already said to them, "I'm going to cheat you." And they all agreed, "Yes, yes, no problem. Whatever you say, charming lady, that's totally fine." So they don't blame themselves at all. So that's part of the demoniac, that they're not blaming themselves, that, yeah, we're right, we said it. Second, generally, the source is not clear to people, especially demoniac mentality. We forget that Krishna is the source, everything that comes from Krishna. We forget that. It's easy to forget. And the third is because that's in the background. What's easily visible generally is the product of mercy, not so much the mercy. For example, between two devotees, let's say two competing young devotees, if one of them gets Krishna's mercy, even the devotee won't turn to Krishna and say, "Why did you give him or her the mercy?" The envy is between the two. Why are they like that? If they were to see that, you know, Krishna is the source, envy goes away. So it's very difficult to see how the source, how Krishna is the cause of all causes. It's very difficult to see. And they don't have that. They're in the moment where there's anger. And anger is such a quality that helps you forget. Smriti Vibhrama. So it's very easy to forget that Mohini Murthy gave them. We said it's okay. They forgot all that. Had they seen the source, they'd be like, yeah, what's the point in fighting? After all, Krishna is giving everyone mercy. They can't see it. It's that nature of envy that doesn't allow us to see that everything for everyone is coming from Krishna. So we have a tendency to see, or here, we see the end point, we don't see the starting point. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class, Prabhu. Just a quick question. It says that the moon god is fighting with Rahu. Is it just Rahu's head? Or is it just he's fighting with Rahu's head? Or
is it, I didn't get the punchline. Is fighting with Rahu?
Yeah, the moon god is fighting with Rahu.
Hold the mic a little away.
Is he fighting like with Rahu's head? Because Rahu only has a head at this point.
Yeah, the head was fighting. Head was flying, zoom, zoom. Now, I don't know if he was riding a lizard or a rat or an elephant or a horse, that I don't know. But they were fighting. All that remained was the head. Formidable head fight. Manoj.
Same context. Prabhupada mentioned in several of the purports that eclipse is caused because of Rahu and the moon fighting.
Right.
But we can, even Vedically, it's seen that you can calculate exactly when the eclipse happens. So how are we to understand that, you know, a fight means usually it's spontaneous. I mean, it happens.
This is a scheduled fight.
Schedule.
They're allowed to fight only on certain days of the almanac. What happens is, the reason you can predict, for example, when you know a person if you know a person's character, you can predict the situations in which they will fight. Can you not? You can tell. In fact, when you advise someone else, you might say, please don't take this further, because as soon as the situation becomes like this, that person will fight with you. Agreed? So in that sense, although it is spontaneous for that person, isn't it predictable? It's predictable. Such and such person in this situation will fight. So now from an astronomy point, every time the moon is in a particular position and all other stars are in some other position, you know the moon is in a weak position, and that's when Rahu will attack. So in that sense, it's predictable. That's the science of astronomy. You can predict such and such time. As soon as this person, like we tell for, you know, when we are counseling someone, please don't do this because this will put you in a weak position. As soon as you're in a weak position, you'll be attacked. Now, in the course of the moon's service, there are times when he's in a strong position and times when he's in a weak position. That's just the nature of this world. Sometimes strong, sometimes weak. And whenever he's weak, he's vulnerable. So you know, in the whole trajectory, he's vulnerable. For example, the sun is very, very strong. But there are times of the year when we don't feel the strength at all. Winter's coming up. We wish we felt the heat of the sun, but like, it's not hot at all. He's there in the sky, but it's blistering cold. But as soon as he's on the northern circuit, we feel the heat. So it's, in that sense, it's the strong and weak. Sun is weaker for us. Of course, now you can say because he's on the southern side, the rays are more slanted. All that is just the effect of it. Does that help? Okay. Something? Jordan, you had something?
I was just thinking that since the time is so different,
the times are different?
This between the sun planets and the heavens.
The distances.
Planets. Yeah, so it seemed like it's happening, eclipses happen quite often in comparison to that time, so it seems like probably he's just attacking all the time.
Eclipses don't happen necessarily more often. There are times when you can predict when it'll happen. Now, back in the fifth canto, or if you watch Sadaputa Prabhu's Mysteries of the Sacred Universe video, he explains this phenomena that the moon is farther than the sun. So when Prabhupada writes it, there is a particular frame of reference from which that is true. It's not absolute distances he's talking about. It's the relative distances. And that video explains it much better. I'm now only using words. Visuals will help. If you look at it from a planar perspective, here's the earth, here's the moon, and the sun. But the trajectory of the sun and the moon is such that from this vantage point on a plane scale, the moon looks higher. Although the distances are farther, the moon looks higher. I wish I can draw it to show you. I'm not good at speaking it. I wish I were. But when you draw it, it makes sense why that's the case. So Sadaputa Prabhu explains. If you open fifth canto, he tells you why that is the case. And then in the video also shows it nicely. Okay, I'll draw it for you now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.